Hello, listeners, and welcome to this month's Centre for Brexit Studies podcast with me, Jessica Guy, and Centre Director, Professor Alec de Ruyter.
Hello, Jess.
I'm also delighted to introduce today's guest, Mr. Thomas Leeson from OpenText, who are global leaders in enterprise information management. Hello, Tom.
Hello, Jess. Hello, Alex. Thanks for having me here today.
We're delighted to have you. Now, Tom, just for today, we've decided to have a bit of a change to our usual format for podcasts. So instead of me asking the questions, it will be Alex. So without further ado, gentlemen, would you like to take it away?
Tom, it's a pleasure to be chatting to you today. I'd like to steer the conversation towards the research project that we are undertaking with OpenText shortly. But first, could you please explain a little bit to our listeners about who OpenText are and what your role within the company is?
Sure, Alex. Well, OpenText is the largest software company in Canada with a $2 billion US dollar turnover. We're a global operation and we describe ourselves as the information company. We're a leading provider of enterprise information management solutions that help companies manage information to improve their productivity, their competitiveness and their customer experiences. And in OpenText, I'm their industry strategist for manufacturing and its supply chain worldwide. And I'm based at the UK head office in Reading.
Well, we're certainly living in interesting times at the moment, Tom, and one certainly characterised by disruption, perhaps in a creative sense, perhaps in a more negative sense. But what do you see as the most disruptive challenges facing manufacturers today?
Well, as we see in our everyday lives and our world is becoming more and more digital and it's touching all aspects of our personal and our working lives. We find ourselves very much digital customers and consumers. But just sticking to manufacturing, we find ourselves amidst a fourth industrial revolution. And this is one that's been driven by data and information. And with the industrial Internet of Things, new data and information-based services like autonomous and connected vehicles, we can expect disruption and transformation. In fact, a change in workforce almost. That all has to be controlled within a framework of security and governance, and we can expect the necessary pressures of regulation and legislation to protect the industry and to protect consumers as well. But can I also add that with every challenge, there's an opportunity. So I actually see a lot of opportunities moving forward.
Is there anything in particular that you think is worth highlighting as an opportunity, Tom?
I think the digital age will actually make us, I think we live more responsively, more within an environment of customised living. So we no longer watch television the same way. We watch things on the go, we watch things at source. And we actually see these things will be moving over into services. So there'll be much more connectivity between raw materials, manufacturing, consumption, and a much more integrated loop on how information generated through those periods of life cycle actually pay back to added services within the life cycle itself.
Well, to come to the matter at hand then in terms of Brexit and of course our particular project trying to understand the impact of Brexit on automotive and aerospace as key industries in the UK, just considering Brexit briefly if we can, what does Brexit add to all these changes and opportunities facing manufacturing, in your view?
Well, I think the key thing is uncertainty, and nobody likes that. There will be changes for sure, and people don't like that much either. But manufacturing has always had the talent for reinventing itself, once it, of course, understands what the parameters are. But at this late hour, and the contradiction is to say it's too early to tell, But from limited information in the public domain, the suggestion is more legislation, more processes, more documentation, and the potential for more disruption.
It is something, then, that 12 months on from the enactment of Article 50, the uncertainty surrounding the likely impact of Brexit on key manufacturing sectors continues, of course. And in undertaking this work with you, we are keen to understand at a micro level just what the potential impact of Brexit on the automotive and aerospace sectors in the UK would be. The automotive and aerospace sectors, being key industries, of course, contribute over £23 billion to the UK economy, excluding revenue generated within their supply chains. The car industry alone employs over 169,000 people, but this figure rises over to well over 700,000 if jobs in related sectors such as vehicle servicing and repair are included. Brexit, of course, raises many common issues around things such as procurement and, of course, the supply chain as such, trade barriers, human resource management, compliance and other legal issues thereof, and indeed customer service, which are indicative of the challenges facing the wider manufacturing sector as a whole. What are your thoughts here?
Well, in all but a few manufacturing sectors, profit margins are tight, and in fact many manufacturers supplement product profit with added value services. Companies' P&Ls have been based on years of trading scenarios that are potentially going to be disrupted in some way. Any delays to business, however small, means a cost to the business. Honda, for example, has been quoted that with over 300 truck deliveries a day to support just-in-time industry standard production methods, a 15-minute delay at a border can cost in the region of £800,000. And added workloads on businesses such as people, talent and skills development, renegotiation or duplication of contracts, procurement from new suppliers, onboarding of new suppliers, irrespective of disruptions to the supply chain, will put further pressures on resources and cost bases. And I think based on some of the previous points discussed, some good mitigation tactics will be around communication, foremost with your employees, your partners and suppliers and your customers. Businesses should have started a year ago looking at efficiency and agility and managing their information to help redeploy resources and also assess resource requirements that may be required and what's coming up. And going back to my previous point of every challenge being an opportunity, if businesses can monetize their information to create new business opportunities through the Internet of Things, for example, based on added value information, it creates new benefits for customers. So disruption becomes transformation, which for me is just a different side of the same coin.
Indeed, you highlight a key point there with supply chains as they currently stand. The whole notion of just-in-time production means that companies literally can only have a few hours of parts or components at any one particular point. So trying to understand what the likely impact of any future trade barriers would be on that if we're subject to increased customs checks, which, as we'll come to later, is very likely, is pivotal, and what options therefore would be available to companies. Certainly in considering the two sectors, our preliminary findings make clear that any Brexit issues facing them will also have knock-on effects to other industries, simply through the linkages and sourcing and supplying that they have. The automotive sector in the UK in 2014 alone, for example, spent over £45 million on food and beverages, just through things such as having food available in staff canteens. And our research to date has also emphasised a key dependence on international and particularly European sourcing for components. Both automotive and aerospace make extensive use of imported parts and components, with these comprising over 50% of the wider supply chain for automotive and 43% for aerospace. Of these imports, the vast majority come from elsewhere in the EU. In considering the trade scenarios likely to face us then, the government has explicitly ruled out membership of the EU Customs Union and the single market. So this suggests that companies are indeed highly likely to face new trade barriers after we leave the EU and the transition period negotiated as it stands ends at the end of 2020. Of course, questions over tariffs are dwarfed by the potential realities of non-tariff barriers. Even relatively simple things such as type approval are likely to be major issues for smaller and niche manufacturers such as Caterham and Lotus. Do you think then, Tom, that the transition period, assuming that we can agree on the status of the Northern Ireland border, means that companies will have some breathing space whilst the government tries to negotiate a new trade deal with the EU, or should they start preparing now?
In terms of breathing space, no. I mean, there's no breathing space. If you look at previous negotiations and the scenarios that we potentially are going to be agreeing to, negotiations are very complex and they're very time-consuming. So start preparing now In fact, like I said previously, people should have started preparing a year ago, and those people will be in a slightly better position than most going forward. But there's no breathing space for sure. Don't wait.
Of course, in alluding to that, then the trade deal struck between Canada and the EU took some 7 years of negotiation. So that certainly reiterates the point you're making there. If then indeed in trying to consider the likely measures that companies will have to look at, customs checks will be a reality in the British government's preferred scenario, even if all regulations governing manufacturing remain aligned with the rest of the EU. This is because foodstuffs will require spot checks in order to ensure that no agricultural produce that doesn't adhere to stringent EU so-called phytosanitary regulations is allowed into the EU, including via smuggling or accident. And of course, this would be one of the key issues with the Northern Ireland border. So documentation, compliance and robust procedures will be crucial. Now, research to date from interviewing managers in the sectors suggests that suppliers in all likelihood will need help to ensure that they comply with new rules and documentation. So clearly, greater supply chain oversight will become necessary. Who are your suppliers 2 tiers down or 3 tiers down? Where are they located? Do you have robust systems that can track changes in suppliers effectively? Risk management will also be crucial. How do you guarantee you can comply with scheduling? Any thoughts, Tom, on these sorts of issues?
I think there's a few things that can help. A good information governance to support regulatory compliance. For example, GDPR is a topical point and a good example right now. By digitising your data and your information, you can become much more efficient in how you manage, control and distribute that information. Large volumes of information can actually be collected. They can be automated and analysed for better business understanding and better business insight and better business outcomes. Modern analytical techniques and machine learning techniques can be applied to information, both to analyse it, personalise it for better customer, employee, supplier engagement and transparency. And then in the supply chain, and looking at the supply chain relationships and the management of those, in fact, a supply chain could be a managed service, which would free up internal resource to focus elsewhere in the business. Because B2B managed supply chains are a well-established technology, established over many years, and there's around $8 trillion worth of transactional business done by managed B2B managed services today in the world.
Returning to aerospace then, continued membership of the European Aviation Safety Agency, or ESA for short, will be absolutely crucial. Even the British Civil Aviation Authority doesn't believe that it has the capability to take on ESA's functions at present. So in other words, it's ESA or bust. The aerospace sector, of course, is supported by a plethora of smaller companies throughout the supply chain, but components crisscross international boundaries. In the unlikely event of tariffs being applied, extensive documentation to support returned goods exemptions will be necessary. But in any event, serious thought needs to be applied to facilitation of customs procedures. In contrast to the automotive sector, little control of this is in the hands of the UK government. Nevertheless, documentation will again be crucial, as will political negotiations to ensure that trucks aren't delayed due to personnel issues of the sort that afflict the Turkey-EU border. And of course, related issues around vehicle registration across the EU, meaning that, again, trucks have to be changed at the Turkey-EU border. Any thoughts here?
Oh, well, I think you make a good point. I mean, the European Aviation Safety Agency, the other agencies that we've benefited from as being part of the EU, you know, there is some further discussion there as to how the relationships will go in the future. But I think it is already well documented that it's not just on the UK side of discussion, particularly around customer management. Other members of the EU also see resource issues and challenges in supporting any changes. And while technology isn't a solution in itself, it can bring significant value and support to help comply with changes and help relieve resources and bottlenecks. So again, any electronic processes or information that can be available in advance of, for example, border engagements to assist identify rules of origin or consignment inventory, such as digital advance shipping notices, the traditional ASN, is likely to help without question.
Of course, a related issue here, Tom, is the capacity of the various government agencies to cope in the event of new trade barriers being introduced. I'm thinking particularly here of HMRC. Is there any way, do you think, that companies could engage with these sorts of government bodies to ensure a seamless process from their end?
Well, I think only time will tell. I do believe, as I've said earlier on in the discussion, that communication is key, and HMRC should be treated as any other supplier, partner or customer. I think the key here is customer communication and everybody being on the same page, and instead of people, you know, kind of looking at these bottlenecks and challenges as other people's problems. I think a problem shared.
That's a very good point. Thank you for that. Are there any other issues you think are germane to the topic at hand that we're talking about at the moment?
I think we're in a, you know, this is a shift change, both as a country and as for manufacturing the way it does business going forward. And obviously only time will tell based on the decisions that are made. But we just really need to start preparing now. We need to start thinking about the potential challenges we face and how we actually mitigate those. And, you know, as I say, only time will tell.
Well, that's just about all we have time for today, folks. We hope you found this snippet interesting and informative. The next steps of our research will be to explore these issues further in interviews with senior managers in both the automotive and aerospace sectors, and we certainly hope to extend this analysis to other industries. So we look forward to presenting findings from these in future recordings. If any of this particular information has interested you and you are a business with particular concerns, feel free to get in touch with us. Forthcoming material will also consider further the related human resource management skills and talent management issues. Tom, I'd like to thank you for today.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Jess.
Well, Jess, I'll hand back to you now to give the website details and closing information.
Thank you, Alex, and thank you, Tom. For further information on the Centre for Brexit Studies, please visit our website at www.bcu.ac.uk/centre-for-brexit-studies or find us on Twitter at BCU_CBS. Thanks all.